Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Glad to have one of my co-hosts back this weekend. It's been a long time since, seems like it's been a long time anyway, since you've been around, John. So how's it going there, Scully?
Everything's all right. I'm back in the swing of things now, so ready to get rolling.
Oh, glad to hear, my man. A lot of things happened since the last time you've been on the show. Let's knock out a few things here. We had some fights yesterday down in Florida. We also had some in upstate New York. John, did you get a chance to watch any of those?
I watched a few. I very rarely watch entire cards. You know, I don't necessarily watch the whole show. Sometimes I watch one of the fights or two of the fights, or I catch the highlights. But which fight did you have in mind? Which one are we talking about?
I was going to start with the ones up in upstate New York there. We did see some very interesting results. Lowell Mass. One of the fights that I wanted to talk about was Mr. Danny O'Connor.
Right.
I mean, you know, we've all seen Danny perform before. I think we went into this fight having high expectations for Danny, but hey, those were quickly sidetracked by Gabriel Bracero. John, what do you think?
Yeah, that was a heck of a shot. I mean, I'll tell you, like, as a point to make, as a boxer myself, even sparring, I always come out taking my time. I was always taught that. Take your time as a professional. And, you know, you see a lot of times I've been in fights where, you know, it'll be literally halfway through the first round, a minute and a half in, 90 seconds. And I'm boxing and taking my time, and people are booing, literally booing in the audience. Like they are in such a hurry for the action to start that a minute and a half into the first round, they're booing because, you know, we haven't went to war yet. And, you know, that's a very vulnerable time. You have to take your time. You have to take it easy. And, you know, if you're ever going to get caught like that, you know, chances are it's going to be very early in the fight. I think, I think the mentality, you know, Danny may have been expecting that mentality. We're just going to, you know, we're easing into the fight. We're going to take our time. And Gabriel, Manuel, he just let it go. He just let that bomb go right over the top. And, you know, that's why they say protect yourself at all times. It's fight, you know, if it's a 12-round fight, it's 12 rounds. If it's 10 rounds, it's 10 rounds. But from the first second of the first round, you're in there fighting. And, you've got to be very, very alert.
You know, maybe it's just me, John, or maybe I'm just being a little too critical here because I've never been in a professional setting. But it seems to me back in the day you saw more fighters come in, you know, they had broken a sweat, they were warmed up. Nowadays, I see a lot of the young fighters coming in that they're cold, they haven't broken a sweat. You know, it seems like the only activity that they've had is that walk to the ring. John, how detrimental is this to a young man's performance if he doesn't warm up properly before he gets in that ring?
You know, I've actually worked in the corners with guys. I've been in the dressing room, and more than one boxer has told me, like, we'll be hitting the mitts and, you know, getting into it in the dressing room, and they'll tell me word for word, they'll say, all right, that's enough. You know, I don't want to burn myself out. And I'm just saying to these guys, like, are you insane? Like, if you're going to burn yourself out loosening up, then let's not even fight. Like, don't even go through with the fight. I mean, what you're going to do in that ring out there mentally and physically and emotionally is going to be 10 times more than what we're about to do here in the dressing room. You know, I have a theory that if you fight a 10-round fight, then it's in at least, you got to consider it like a 12-round fight. And the first two rounds are in the dressing room. You have to really, really get into it and get yourself nice and warm. Otherwise, you know, you come out and you see these guys slow starters and they get caught. And you see it a lot where the guys are very dry. And I was always taught that when you get in the ring, look at your opponent, see if he's got a sweat going. And a lot of times you see guys and they're dry as a bone. And it's a mistake.
Yeah, it does truly usually turn out to be that way, you know. But like you said, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, it's I don't want to say it's the work ethic or lack of well, I guess I do want to say that it's a lack of work ethic and a cultivation of bad habits that you know, it just seems like, you know, the fighters as well as the public, you know, seem to only be interested in those 3 minutes in between the bell, instead of putting forth a quality product and perhaps even, you know, making themselves better in the progress of that. John, do you think that it's possibly a lack of mental fortitude?
Oh, for sure, for sure. You know, and a lot of times it's simply a case of sometimes with a fighter doesn't always think rationally. You know, they think, overthink things sometimes. And sometimes you need someone of experience to really point out what you know, what it actually is. And you know, I'll give a quick example just as a related story. I was working a corner one time for a really, the kid was a really good amateur. He turned pro, I believe it was his second or his third pro fight, and his trainer came over to me. I was helping in the corner, but I wasn't his head trainer. And his trainer, who was inexperienced, came over to me and said, "Man, can you talk to him?" He said his legs feel weak. He said he feels tired, you know, and he's worried. And I said, "Oh, man, no problem. And I went over to him, and I took a gamble based on knowing the kid and my own mentality. But I figured if he can't handle this, then he can't handle the big stage anyway. So I walked up to him, and I said it very simple. I said, "Listen, man, stop the nonsense. I go, you're one of the best amateurs in the country. You train like an animal. You train harder than anybody I've ever seen. You're not tired. Don't go out there and make an excuse so that you can have an excuse to lose later. I said, let's just go out there and take care of business, all right?" And he goes, "All right, okay." It's almost like I caught him in a lie. You know? He said, "Oh, okay. And he went out and he stopped the kid like in the second round and never once ever mentioned his legs again. Like it never was an issue. So it's just, you know, a lot of times it's mental tricks being played on a fighter. And, you know, I would say it a lot of times, a lot of fights can be won and lost in the dressing room. That's for sure.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Now, we talked a little bit about what happened to Mr. O'Connor. John, I was also, you know, not only was I surprised that my cable network has picked up the Ben Sports Network, which you know broadcasts all the British fights. So I did get a chance to see almost this full card. John, when you heard about Terry Flanagan, I don't know if you got a chance to watch it or not, but the way he dismantled Diego Magdaleno in two rounds to me was a thing of wonder. I've always been kind of high on Diego. But this Diego that fought Terry, I don't know whether it was a very bad Diego or a very good Terry Flanagan. I mean, it's, you know, considering, you know, the fight was over in England. But, you know, from the results and from the way things looked, Diego just didn't look like the normal Diego that we usually see in between the squared circle.
Right. You know, I did not get a chance to see it in its entirety, but I'll say this, you know, when a fight is signed, like right now, you say, hey, Canelo and Cotto are fighting. Everybody says, what a great fight it's going to be. It's going to be unbelievable. Now, that's said in your mind, assuming that it's going to be both of them at their best. Like, you automatically assume that the best of Cotto and the best of Canelo are going to show up. And a lot of times, that's not the case. You know, you see a guy January, and he has a fight, and you're like, man, this guy's awesome. This guy's unbelievable. The counterpunching, this guy's power. This combination's a laser beam. Now, you can't wait to see him again. Now you see him 3 months later, and maybe he's got the flu. Maybe he's going through a divorce. You know, different things might be happening. And he doesn't have that thing. And he woke up, as a matter of fact, simply put, he woke up on the wrong side of the bed that day. And, you know, that's why they fight the fights, because, you know, you see a guy on Monday, he's not necessarily going to be the same guy on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or ever again. And that's why we fight the fights. You know, so that's why whenever I say who's going to win a fight, I always, you know, it goes without saying that I'm assuming both guys are going to come in at their best. And, you know, there's no way to really foresee anything otherwise. Although probably, in my experience, the majority of fights, guys aren't at their best. You know, I've been in a lot of fights with fighters and as their trainer. And, I mean, I had one guy, he was going through a divorce, you know, just at the time of his fight, just miserable. I had another guy, he actually fainted in his hotel room the morning of the fight, fainted in the bathroom. I had another guy lose 12 pounds the night before the weigh-in, and you know, so these are unforeseen things that impact a fight. So we hope the best of each guy shows up, but when in reality, we're just hoping the best that day, whatever they can bring that day, because it's not always the same thing they brought 2 months earlier.
Excuse me. John, do you think that lack of consistency, that we see from today's fighter, do you think that possibly, I mean, even though we're paying, you know, when you consider the type of money you got back in your day, I mean, we're paying considerable sums of money here, but it just doesn't seem like we're getting the same dedication. Am I wrong?
You know, I think that I think it's unique, and it's crazy, but I think it's actually unique. I think a guy like Hagler, a guy like Bernard Hopkins, a guy like Mayweather, in this era, I'd say Hopkins and Mayweather, you know, stand out as two guys who are notorious, infamous just for their dedication to their craft, to their game, to their career. And I think a lot of guys don't do that. You know, you have an image of fighters just constantly training, 12 months a year. They're always in the gym, 52 weeks a year. You know, they take a holiday off. And, you know, I worked with a fighter one time, pretty big game fighter, champion, and he did not go to the gym until he had a fight schedule. You know, well, back in my day, like, I was always in the gym. Like, if I fought Friday on ESPN, I was in the gym on Monday. Like, that's just what I did. That was just my life. That's what I do. I go to the gym. And I know guys, and I know one guy in particular, he could fight on July 5th, and you won't see him again in the gym until his promoter tells him his next fight is coming up. Like, you literally would not see him. He would not come to the gym. You know, so it's a different era, you know, because guys aren't – this isn't people's – I don't think people take it as their livelihood. As much as maybe they say they do. Back in the old days, guys like Jake LaMotta, Ray Robinson, they fought to put food on the table. Like, literally, they fought so many fights because they wanted to save as much money as they could and make as much money as they could. And, you know, it's just a different mentality. You know, even in other sports, you know, in baseball, a lot of people don't know this. Guys like stars, you're talking Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, guys like that, big-time baseball players, they used to work in the off season. They used to work jobs to keep busy and to make more money. Like, they wouldn't, No, that would never happen today. You wouldn't see Ken Griffey Jr. working in the Walmart. You know what I mean? But I don't know if it was Mickey Mantle. I remember my father was telling me. It might have been Mickey Mantle or Whitey Ford or one of those guys from the 50s, a big star. And in the off season, he was like a beer distributor or something along those lines. You know, it's a different mentality today. The guys are handed a lot. You know, they're exposed to a lot. They get a lot of exposure. And, you know, I just think it's a different mentality. Guys like Hopkins and Mayweather are unique today, and it's a big deal because people say, wow, those guys really train hard. It's like, man, back in the day, everybody used to train like they did. Now they're special because nobody else does, and that's not a good thing. That's good for them, but that's not good for the sport.
This is a kind of hard question for me, John, because as a trainer, I don't want to insult your integrity, but is this the fault of the trainer? I mean,
No. Listen, and I used to think the same similar thing. Like, oh, how come the trainer isn't there? It's like, listen, these guys are grown men. They go home. You know, they go home. After the gym, they go home. People say, well, how come he wasn't on weight? It's like, well, he went home. He went home and he drank two bottles of soda. I mean, that's him. I can't be in his house with him. I can't follow this guy. I can't force him to come to the gym. You know, I've seen fighters literally tell the trainer, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll be here at 4 o'clock. We're going to start training camp. And you don't see him for 2 weeks. And the trainers are going bananas. Like, the trainers are going crazy, just calling them and calling their mother, calling the fighter's mother, calling the sister. Where is he? Come on, get him over here. You know, it's not for a lack of trying, but and me, you know, I'm different in that I push a little bit, but I look at it, I let my guys know. I said, look, boxing is the most dangerous game on earth. It's the toughest game on earth, and if you want to be the best, you got to do your thing. You got to be in the gym. You got to train right. You have to be the most dedicated guy out there. I said, if you don't want to do that, don't think I'm going to be coming to your house, knocking on your door. Because if I have to force you to do it, in the grand scheme of things, you don't want it, and I'm wasting my time. If I have to go to your house at 6 in the morning and knock on the door to wake you up, then you don't want to run. And you're wasting the long term and the long scan of things, you're wasting my time. You know, I'm sure nobody has to tell Bernard Hopkins to get up and run. I'm sure of it. I'm positive of it. I guarantee it. I'll bet my life on it. And if you don't want that, then you don't want to be Bernard Hopkins. You don't want to be the best. And I'm not coming to your house knocking on your door. I'm going to tell you what you have to do, and if you don't do it, that's your fault. You know, I'm not a babysitter. I will not do that.
And understandably so. I mean, I definitely go along with everything that you're saying. And, you know, I mean, your record speaks for itself. The reason why I asked that question is because not only do we see a lot of the young guys coming up with this type of work ethic and with this type of attitude, but some of these guys are the sons and relatives of some of these very guys, Hall of Fame, or these guys that you mentioned, that exuded that type, that particular work ethic back in the day. But as you say, right, Nowadays, you know, because they have that particular name, they think that they're entitled and they don't have to work.
Right.
John,
I'll tell you what a lot of people think. I agree with you, but I'll tell you another thing. A lot of people think that, like, I've actually heard this. Like, people say, like, you know, this guy, he's fighting, his father was a two-time world champion. You know, he's got the bloodline. I've heard that so many times. And me personally, I believe that is the most ridiculous. There's no such thing to me as a bloodline of champions, you know, because your father was the champion of the world. And if anything, it's been proven beyond the shadow of a doubt that it doesn't mean a thing. I give an example. Muhammad Ali and his brother. I mean, half the people in the world don't even know Ali's brother fought, let alone, you know, wasn't a top contender or anything like that. Ali's nephew. People say, oh, Ali's nephew is, he's going to be the man. You know, he's got the bloodline. Well, most people don't even know how he had a nephew. They couldn't tell you his name if their life depended on it because he didn't do anything. You know, very few guys, their fathers were champions and they become champions. It's rare. It's a rare thing in the grand scheme of things. You still have to put the work in. Your father was a great fighter. He trained hard. Well, he ran hard years ago. Or whatever, it doesn't mean that you're going to be in good shape tomorrow. Ran in 1978. You know, you had to get up and run for yourself. And, you know, I think a lot of guys need to understand that.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't quite looked at it that way, but, you know, I mean, I did, when I do hear of that particular statement, you know, good bloodlines, I kind of cringe myself. I mean, you know, we're not horses. I mean, you know, just because,
right,
you know, one is a
it's been proven 100 times over. I mean, how many great fighters have had great sons boxing? I mean, I can't, you know, who are all these people that are producing offspring that's becoming world champions like they were? It's very rare. You know, so, but I wish people would stop saying that, the bloodline doesn't mean anything. I mean, everybody's an individual, period.
Yeah, we would definitely handle a perfect example of that this last weekend, the son of Julian Jackson. John, did you happen to see that fight?
No, but actually I heard about it. Actually, one of the guys in my gym was talking. And it's funny because the guy in my gym was actually surprised. He's like, man, that was Julian Jackson's son. And in my head I'm thinking, what does that mean? He could have been Joe the Barber's son. Like, the fact that he's Julian's son, you know, doesn't shock, because he got knocked out, it doesn't shock me because he was Julian's son. Like, Julian's son is just as susceptible to being knocked out as Muhammad Ali's son. Anybody else? You know, so I think hopefully that idea that there's a bloodline of success running through people's veins, champions' veins, you know, I hope that window, you're going to be in some trouble.
Speaking of a little trouble here, John, you know, I know it, on paper it all sounds very good. You know, Adrian Broner, four-time champ, four different weight classes, you know.
Yeah.
And it all sounds really good. It sounds like he's actually accomplished a whole lot of things, you know, four weight division champions. I mean, you know, I mean, it sounds like a great resume.
Well put it this way. He's a four-time champion, and Alexis Arguello is a four-time champion. So there's probably a lot of young guys today who are better than Alexis. Like, they actually believe that. They've been led to believe because of this. And I don't know if I'm the right guy to ask or the wrong guy to ask, depending on how you look at it. But I despise this insanity that we've got. Adrian freaking Broner, like, four-time champion of the world, is so insane to me. It's so ridiculous. Like, it's not, and it's not even anything really personal against him. It's just the idea of it all. Like, four times. You know what I mean? Like I remember when Arguello went up, he tried to become a four-time champion, and he went right to Aaron Pryor. He could have went to Leroy Haley or Bruce Curry or Lonnie Smith or whoever was there at that time, and he went to Aaron Pryor, and he lost. So is going to a lesser guy and winning better than going to Aaron Pryor and losing? I mean, I don't know, man. In my history, I go to Aaron Pryor and lose. And, you know, these guys, man, the manipulation is just insane. Like, a four-time champion. Basically, that tells me being a four-time champion doesn't mean anything anymore. It's not like when Henry Armstrong and these guys were trying for it. It's not the same. That day is gone. It's gone. It's eliminated.
Now, you also wrote an article this week. I believe it was up on your Facebook page. And you were talking about the way a particular organization is handling things.
The WBA. Let's put it out there. The WBA.
Can you kind of give us a little background on what's happening here? To me, I mean, I read it.
Listen, check this out. Here's what it is. In a nutshell, this is what it is. These freaking guys, I guess Eubank, you know, Eubank, Chris Eubank's son. I don't know if it's Chris Eubank Jr. or whatever his name is. Eubank, the son. I guess he's the champion. I didn't even know that, but he's the champion. And apparently, he's got a title defense. I think it's against Tony Jeter. He's defending the title. They are letting the fight go. He's defending the title. As soon as the fight's over, no matter who wins, they are stripping the champion, and they're stripping Eubank. It's almost going to sound like I'm joking, like I'm making this up to be funny, but this is the honest truth. They're stripping him for inactivity, like for not fighting. So they're basically letting him fight a fight so they can strip him for not fighting. That's what they're doing. And to me, all they're saying really is, I want you to fight so that you can pay us sanction fees. That's what we want. Then we're going to strip you and we're going to have somebody else fight and then they can pay us sanction fees too. The WBA, you know, I grew up, WBA, WBC, that was the thing. It's like, man, WBA, WBC, those are the two worlds. You know, the IBF wasn't even around yet. So I love the WBA. I love the belt. I love the WBC. I love the belt. Now I look at them and I just like, I have no respect. Like, I can't even respect these people. I can't respect the people that they're, you know, whoever he is, the president of the WBA, I think I have Mendoza or whoever it is. I can't respect him. I can't even, if I met him, I couldn't even like shake his hand. I couldn't even touch his skin because of the insanity and the stupidity that they're heaping upon us. The disrespect, the championship of the world to me, I mean, all due respect to a world champion, but man, this is not the title that Roberto Duran won and Jack Johnson and Rocky Marciano. This is not their title. This is something else. This is a different era. Those titles are gone.
Yeah, I don't remember Roberto Duran or any of those guys fighting for a diamond belt, an interim silver belt, Jack Daniels, barbecue brisket belt.
Let me tell you the crazy thing. Here's the crazy thing, and I mean this. I can honestly stand here right now in my living room, and I'm telling you, I don't even know what the silver belt is. I could, if you held a gun to my head right now and said, tell me what the silver belt is, or I'm going to blow your brains out. I'm a dead man. I could not tell. I don't even know if you know. I don't know. That's how crazy. They're telling me these certain guys are the WBC silver champion. And I'm like, what does that mean? Is he the champion? I don't know what that means. I don't know what the interim. They have interim champions when there's already a champion. They have the WBA champion, middleweight, and then they have the interim champion. The interim is supposed to be when Joe Louis went to war and Jimmy Bivens took his place until he got back. That's the interim champion. Now they have champions while there are already other champions. It's so stupid. Like, it's almost, if I explain it to somebody who doesn't know boxing, they'd never watch boxing. They'd hear that and they'd go, well, you know, what am I going to watch that sport for? That's pretty stupid. So that's where we're at, man. That's what we're dealing with in this era.
I mean, I think it's rather, you can use the word confusing, you can use the word stupid, when you have more professional champions than you have amateur weight classes.
Yeah, I mean, stupid, criminal, I mean, insane, whatever the worst words we can come up with, we can throw them all in. I mean, it's, you know, this is not the sport that I grew up in. This is not the sport that I grew up loving. And you know, can you imagine a kid like me? You know, I got my start on my father's bed. Every weekend, I would use the bed as a ring, and I would imitate fighters, and I would fight for the world title. Could you imagine me as a 12-year-old on his bed trying to win the WBC silver belt? You know, and saying to myself, here we are, folks, Madison Square Garden, we're going for the silver belt. You know, I just couldn't imagine, you know? I mean, you know, there's only one world, man, and I wanted that one. You know, I didn't want the regular, the interim, the silver. You know, so I don't know. So basically, Chris Eubank is going to fight. Came to Tony Jeter. So basically, what they're telling Tony Jeter is, here you are. We want you to fight for our championship of the world. If you win it, you got to get. We're going to strip you. As soon as the fight's over, we're going to take it back. Can you? How is he supposed to get up and run in the morning and be motivated to be the champion of the world when they're telling him this championship is not worth anything? We're going to take it from you. We're not. You can't have it. How insane is this, man? It's you know, I wish the government, I wish somebody could step in and just step on these guys and get a whole new, you know, government or whatever they do. We got to get something done because this is just beyond stupid.
I hear you, John. My man, as usual, you know, it's so much fun talking with you, talking about boxing, you know, glad to have you back in the fold, my man. You know, glad, you know, we can sit down and talk a little bit. But why don't you tell everyone what you have going on in social media, where they can find you, and any final thoughts you might have for the audience today?
Well, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Iceman John Scully. I'm always on there. And John the Iceman Scully at Facebook, lots of boxing talk. And any fans that are in the DMV area in D.C. or Virginia, we're actually I'll be in the PBC show this week coming up on Saturday the 17th just outside of D.C. in Virginia at the Patriot Center. I believe Lamont Peterson is the main event, and I'll be in town for that fight. So if anyone's listening and they're planning on going to the fight, you know, you'll see me. Stop up and say hi if you know what I look like, and I'll be walking around. I love talking to boxing people, and no, so that's it. I'm on those, like I say, Iceman John Scully at Instagram and Twitter, and lots of boxing talk on there every day.
Hey John, like I said, so glad to have you back, my man. We look forward. Hopefully, you know, they'll get you up on the TV show, on the TV program, because that is a pretty good card, and I'm looking forward to seeing Lamont back in the ring, and hey, where he goes from here. So,
yeah.
Once again, man, thank you so much, my man, and hey, you have a great night.
All right, buddy. You too. Thanks for having me. All right.
Oh, that was Iceman John Scully. Ice has been gone for a couple of weeks due to some taking care of his father. But right now, let's get my man Ronnie Shields on the line. Ronnie and his fighters were fighting last week. I mean, were actually traveling last week. They were on last Tuesday night fights. Let's see. Mr. Shields, do we have you on the line?
Yes.
Great. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we do have the man is back. It's time for a little straight talk with Mr. Ronnie Shields. Ronnie, how are you doing this evening, my man?
Doing great, man.
Ronnie, you know, I'm gonna start off picking on you right off the bat here, my man, because we saw a great performance by your fighter Tuesday night. But Ronnie, that is probably the most calmest that we've seen you on TV in the last 2 years.
Well, you know, Cowboy, you know, we know he was gonna fight a tough fight. You know, that's the reason we took it. You know, you have to, at some point, see where the younger fighters are in their career. So with this guy, we know he was a four-time National Golden Gloves champion. We know, you know, everything about his amateur background. So we know it was going to be a tough fight. And we just had to see how he was going to handle it. And while we thought he lost the first two rounds, you know, he came back the way he's supposed to. You know, Cowboy's a really slow starter. So, we know that, you know, if you put a lot of pressure on this kid, you know, maybe the kid will tire out a little bit and get Cowboy a chance to kind of catch up. And he did. He caught up good in the third round, dropped the kid in the fourth round, and then he won the last two rounds. So you know, everybody was proud of him for the way he fought. You know, he got a little nick under his eye, but, you know, our cut man, Cree Fountain, he did a great job as always. And he just told him, don't worry about it. Just listen to the instructions and just keep on fighting. And that's what he did. And, you know, he got the victory.
Now, Ryan, that was, you know, the second young fighter that we saw kind of get in a little trouble. Had an opponent that was very tough, but he also stood up to the task and pulled off a victory. And I'm talking about the young man, Mr. Brian Pee Wee Cruz. He had a tough outing his last fight too. But once again, Ronnie, you seem to find a way to inspire these young men and bring them through the storm. Ronnie, how do you did you contribute that to the trust that you build up on a daily basis in camp?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, it's all about, you know, learning. You know, these guys have to learn when fights are tough, man. You have to listen. This is why you have to train hard. And this is why, you know, we try to go over every aspect of the game. And you know, and it really helps the guys. And this is when we try to tell them, you know, how so important it is to train hard, because the conditioning has to be there when you really need it. And, you know, again with Pee Wee Cruz, Pee Wee fought a tough fight. He fought a kid that everybody else was turning down. So, you know, so I was really proud of Pee Wee, the way he came back and he fought and he won. And, you know, it was a victory that he really, really needed. And it was one that was, it was well deserved.
Yes, it was. Ronnie, how satisfying is it to watch these young guys? You know, when you're taking them step by step, like we had mentioned on other shows, it's a lot easier for, you know, trainers to take a guy that's a world champion or somebody that's already established and build up their accolades on the fighter. But you take these young men, and not only do you mold them into fighters, but you establish a sense of comradeship and a sense of sportsmanship that we don't see a lot of today. Most fighters and trainers are about the commercial value. But, Ronnie, you seem to take it to a different level. How satisfying is that to see a young man succeed?
Well, you know, it's very satisfying. I think what it is also is that I don't concentrate on wins and losses. And I think that's what the fighters really understand, is that, you know, I don't put any pressure on them. You have to win. You have to win. You know, I think when you do that to a fighter, it put too much pressure on them, to the point to where they know that, you know, it's like do or die. And I try to take that pressure away from them. You know, I try to give examples to the point to where, you know, you have a great manager. You know, he's not going to be disappointed in you. As long as you trained hard, you did what you're supposed to do in the gym. You know, he called me and he get updates on how these kids are doing. And so I really try to encourage them all the time to, you know, not only train hard, but don't think about winning or losing, because that's not the point. The point is being the best that you can be on that night. And, you know, so far it's been so good, man. The guys really buy into that, and they understand. You know, I mean, they seen how one of the younger guys, Justin Deloach, how he lost. But now he's come back and won two straight fights. You know, his last fight was by knockout. And so, you know, they've come back and see that we didn't give up on Justin, that, you know, he had a setback. And in life, you're going to have setbacks, but you shouldn't have to pay it with your own life. You know, you have to just continue to work hard, and the team that we built are going to always be around you.
Do you think that that sense of stability, as well as that trust, is what sets your young fighters apart from a lot of the younger fighters that they're facing or the programs that they're in?
Well, you know, I really don't know about a lot of other programs. You know, I can only tell you what I hear from other people. And from, you know, I've heard other guys tell their fighter, well, if you lose, you're done. You know, this is it. You know, we're not giving you another chance. You know, I have actually heard that, you know, and I would never tell a fighter that, because, you know, that's putting too much pressure on him, that if he loses, then you're done with him. So that means, you know, if he does lose, you know, if he's losing a fight, even if he gets discouraged, then that's helping the other guy to win. That's not helping your fighter. So, you know, we try to take all that stuff away and just concentrate on the positive things and making sure we do the right things. And, you know, as in Cowboy's last fight, you know, lost the first two rounds. But, you know, I just told him, look, man, you know, you got to do the right things in there. You know, you got to use your jab and you got to go to this guy's body to break him down and to get him on your level. And when he did that, then Cowboy surpassed him in the level. So that's, you know, that's the results of it.
Ronnie, do you see a lack of mental toughness in the young fighters that are coming up today? When I say that, I mean that they put more emphasis on the commercial end of the business than in actually developing not only themselves as a fighter, but developing themselves as people for after they get out of the fight game.
No, I think I say just the opposite. You know, I think. You know, they want to develop themselves more as a fighter right now. They only thinking of today. A lot of fighters don't think about tomorrow. You know, they always think that, you know, hey, I got a 10, 12-year career, so I don't have to think about what's going to happen afterwards until that time is almost there. And that's one thing that we talk to them about is, you know, you have to think about not now, but you have to think about later also. Because if you don't think about later, you know, I mean, you know, you can really have a discouraging career because, you know, once you start losing and you get that mentality that you're not good enough, you know, then everything changes. You know, you change the landscape of everything. So, you know, we try to keep you guys positive and just think about the future also because, you know, it's boxing shouldn't be about wins and losses. That's number one thing that fighters have to understand. That's what it shouldn't be about, but that's what people are trying to make it about. And if you put on a good showing, hey, people want to see you again. So, and these guys see that, you know, if guys come and all of a sudden they see them doing great and then they lose, but then they see them come back again and say, hey, man, well, this guy lost and he was able to come back. And, but, you know, but the thing about it is they still put too much pressure on wins or losses because, you know, they want you to sit there and go toe-to-toe. And if that's not your style, then you shouldn't be fighting that kind of fight. But I see so many guys that are changing in the trying to change themselves into be something that they're really not. And so what that does is it makes them for a short career. And so now saying, well, you know, your career is 10, 12 years, you know, maybe your career is only 5 or 6 years now because now they try to put too much pressure on guys to just stand and go toe-to-toe to be exciting. You know, why would you want a guy to be something that he's not? And I see so many fighters fall into that trap, you know, instead of, you know, using their own style to make a name for themselves, they're doing something different. And so what I try to do is to tell them, look, you know, that's not you. That's not who you are. You have to continue to be who you are. And, you know, a prime example is Arislan De Lara. You know, so many people come up to me all the time, hey, man, why don't you make him fight? Why? He's the best boxer in the world. Why would I want him to fight, to stand up and go toe-to-toe with a guy? That's not his style. You know, in 10, 12 years, Arislan De Lara, you know, he'll still be around. While a lot of these guys that's fighting outside of their style, you know, these guys will be gone. And he'll still be around doing his thing. So it works for him. So I'm not going to do anything that does not work for him or for anybody else, for that matter of fact.
Yeah. You know, you hear all the arguments you hear about, you know, being unexciting and all of that. But, hey, you know, like you said, if that's what works for him and if that's his style, why would you try to put a fighter in harm's way? Ronnie, you know, I just had a conversation with John Scully, and one of the things to me, I mean, we've had numerous conversations about Adrian Broner. You know, we've discussed him up and down and that, but Ronnie, one of the things that really kind of bothers me is the buildup and all of the hype surrounding Adrian. They bill him as a four-time world champion, and I understand, you know, the whole process. I understand the commercial process and whatnot. But Ronnie, all of these different belts and different sanctioning bodies is just not only disrespecting the fighter, but the actual idea of what the belt represented to begin with.
Well, you know, I think people got lost. You know, a lot of fighters got lost when they try to put the belt above the fighters. You know, I mean, look, it's good to win a belt. You can't deny that. That's an accomplishment in the sport of boxing. But at the same time, you know, they put too much emphasis on a belt. You know, it's not all about the belt sometimes. You know, sometimes it's just about two fighters getting in and fighting to see who's the best fighter out there. And that doesn't always mean you're fighting for a championship. So, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of fighters, you know, at this day and time, they really don't care about a belt. You know, because, you know, the first thing I hear a lot of guys say is, it's too many belts out there. You know, like in a middleweight division, I was looking the other day. You have so many champions. I mean, I haven't seen, like in a middleweight division, Danny Jacobs is a champion. Then you got Triple G as a champion. Then you got Lemieux, who was a champion. Then you got like three guys from Europe that's champions. And I'm like, hold up. I can't even count how many belts are out there. You know, because you have an interim champion, then you got a regular champion, then you got I don't know what belt Danny Jacobs had. I don't know, even though he's not a regular or interim champion. They call him a champion, but he's not the super champion. So, and then I looked and it was some more guys that had world title belts at 160 pounds also. So to me, you know, belts, what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything because if you're not recognized, it's too many guys that's recognized as champion in the same weight class. And the only way you fix that is if these guys fight each other and you get it down to one, you know. And you know, I think like in the days of Muhammad Ali and those guys, they had it right when you only had one champion. That was it. But then all these other boxing organizations formed, and now, you know, it changed the landscape of everything, because now you put the pressure on these guys and say, you know what, you know, hey, you know, you could be a world champion in our, you know, for our organization. And so all these fighters, man, you know, but now that's starting to change now, because more and more I'm hearing guys say, hey, man, you know, I just want to fight. I just want to make money to take care of my family. This is my sport. I love it. And, you know, I don't care about the belt. You know, and I think so many fighters are like that today, because even if you win a world title, it's not recognized by the people. So it doesn't make a difference.
Is there a way that we can get back to that, Ronnie? I mean, we have so many organizations. I mean, you know, how do we get back to that one champion, one weight class, one champion? How do we get back there?
Well, you're not going to get back there, because here's the problem. Like with the WBC, you can't hold another championship and be champion with the WBC. Like, you know, if you're WBC champion, you can't have a WBA and a WBO championship. You have to give yours up. So this is why you'll never have a unified champion, you know, because they're going to strip you if you try to do that. So, you know, so the belts will never be unified. So, you know, that's just off the table there. And, you know, and look, but all of these sanctioning fees that these guys charge, this is why you have so many champions. And, you know, you have minor champions like the USBA, the NABF, the like the international champion, the Pan Pacific champion, the Pan Asian champion. You have all these different champions and all these different belts that, you know, and they do it because of sanctioning fees. You know, these guys get like 3% of a fighter's purse for sanctioning fees. And so they're making a lot of money. And what you might think, well, for this guy, they'll make $2,000. For that guy, they'll make $3,000. But understand how many weight divisions you have. And then all of a sudden, one of these guys make a big purse, like $1 million or something, and they're getting 3% of that, then you know, and just keep adding up for all the sanctioning bodies. So the sanctioning bodies are really making a lot of money off of the fighters. And they don't realize that they're killing these fighters. They're hurting the fighters more than anything because of these belts. Because every fighter want to say, you know what, man, I was a champion. And that's all it means to certain guys. But now the business side is really coming out, and fighters starting to understand, hey, I don't need to give them 3% of $1 million to fight for their belt. I can do that and keep my money. I don't give a damn about no belt. And I'm starting to hear that more and more all the time. You know, a lot of fighters now that does have a promoter, they, you know, when they before they sign a contract, they put in a contract that, hey, if I fight for a world title, then you the promoter have to pay the sanctioning fee, not me. You know, so if that's going to be the case, then a lot of fighters will want to continue to fight for these belts. But if the promoter said, no, I'm not paying for nothing, you're going to be the champion, then you have to pay it yourself. And you know what? That's where the problem comes in. Because 3% to a lot of fighters means, yeah, that's a lot of money.
Oh, hey, when you figure young fighter, 3% here, 3% there, another percent there. I mean, you know, hey, just like in the entertainment business, those little percentages, even though they sound small, they add up.
Oh, absolutely, they add up. And, you know, when you figure, hey, I got to pay a manager, I got to pay a trainer, I got to pay a conditioning guy, I got to pay this person, I got to pay that person. You know, if a promoter of that fight, but another guy is promoting it, then you got to pay your promoter too. And so, you know, and then on top of that, you got to pay sanctioning fees. So, you know, I mean, it's a lot to it, you know, and, you know, and just knowing the business, you know, and when you start doing the economics of everything, then you know what? You know, you're saying $1 million ain't nothing anymore because, you know, you got to pay taxes. And by the time you finish paying everybody, you know, while your user can go home for maybe like $700,000-$800,000, now you're only going home with like $300,000. And you'd be like, man, you know, where'd the other $700,000 go? You know, then you start saying, you know, hey, man, then you're starting, you know, and so many fighters now want to cut everybody. And I understand because they have a family. They say, look, man, I'm the one risking my life. I'm the one that's doing all the work, you know, and I don't want to pay everybody, and then I ain't got nothing when it's time to go home, you know, and it's understandable. But at the same time, if you're a guy who's been with that fighter for so long to help him to get to that point, then you ain't going to want to get cut either because you have a family that you want to take care of.
You know, Ronnie, there were a lot of people that criticized Peter Quillin when he turned down the fight about a year ago. And when he came on the show, he said almost the exact same. I mean, he repeated exactly what you're saying, almost word for word. It's just kind of amazing how you can put a man in, say you're going to pay him $1 million, and at the end of the day, he comes up with less than a quarter of that, and you expect him to be able to, like you said, take care of his family, take care of his expenses, and smile, you know, as you take your sanctioning fees, you know, out of his purse. It does seem to be a bit much to ask.
Oh, absolutely, man. And, you know, and I just think that it's crazy that people don't really know the boxing business, but they criticize fighters for not taking certain fights. And trust me, fighters, you know, they learn the business real fast. You know, the majority of fighters, they learn the business real fast, and they understand that, you know, they can offer so much money, and people say, oh, man, I'll take that. But they don't know what else comes along with it. You know, it's easy to say, hey, man, we're going to pay you $10 million, but people don't know what comes along with the $10 million, you know? And this is why a lot of fights aren't made, and this is what people that don't really know the business, fans that don't know the business on the outside don't know why certain fights can't be made. Because it's too much money got to come out of the opponent's end, and it's not worth it. And if it ain't worth it, then you're not going to do it. And, you know, why risk yourself when the other guy is making so much money, and then you're going to go home with nothing? So, you know, and that's why when a lot of fights aren't made, I know the reason why. So this is why I just let it go. And I say, you know, and I try to tell people all the time, look, man, you know, until you be in a position to understand why this guy don't want to take this fight, then, you know, you got to understand that. And then when you try to explain that to people, they don't understand, well, man, because they just looking at, you know, what you're coming home with. But if you say, hey, man, I made $5 million, but I'm only going home with $400,000. You know, $400,000 sounds like a lot of money to somebody who, you know, who don't have any money. You know, so that sounds like a lot of money. But you were saying, but hold up, man, I was supposed to make $5 million. And this is all I came home with, $400,000. You know, and people would be like, man, well, you know, that's still a lot of money. But they don't understand that, you know, if I'm going to make $5 million, you bet certain amount of money is not going to go to certain people. And, you know, and this is why a lot of times you see these fighters, you know, they're not taking any fight because of that.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to be a very tangled up web there. Another situation we were talking about, Ronnie, I'm not sure it seems that the WBA, there's a fight on October 24th, Chris Eubank is fighting, and even though there's it's supposedly for a WBA championship, supposedly whoever wins this fight is going to be stripped of the title for inactivity. Ronnie, how can you fight a fight and be stripped of your title because of inactivity on the night of the fight? I don't understand that.
Well, you know, these guys, they make up their own rules. You know, it's a death sanctioning body, and they make up their own rules because, you know, they want somebody to have the belt who can make them more money. And so this is what they do. They'll say, well, you know what? Okay, you can fight for this belt, but, you know, you have to give it up because you haven't fought in a while or whatever, you know, because you haven't made them money. You know, and this is why they're trying to strip Guillermo Rigondeaux, because he haven't fought since last December of last year. And so now, you know, they're saying, hey, you know, you have to give up the belt. We're having a committee meeting because we want you to give up the belt because you haven't defended the title since last December. But his promoter is saying, well, look, man, you haven't gave us a mandatory defense. You haven't said, hey, you got to fight this guy or you got to fight that guy. So we don't really have to defend nothing if we don't have a mandatory defense. You know, we can take a voluntary defense, but still, you know, it doesn't mean nothing because you haven't given us a mandatory defense. You know, and that's against their own rules. They make the rules, but they don't abide by them. So this is what's so crazy about these organizations. They do whatever they want to do. But if you're not making them any money, then they want to strip you of the belt, let somebody else fight for it, and take the little money that they're going to get. Hopefully, you know, they start making a little more money so they can make more money. But what they don't want is for you to just sit back and sit down and not fight, because then they can't make any money.
Like I said, what a tangled web we weave. Running out, we hit on the WBA. Let's talk about the WBO. Now, we just saw the big card take place yesterday. Fortunately, I got to see most of it. We do get that particular network out here in San Diego, so I did get to watch a lot of these fights. 154, we saw Liam Smith take apart Thompson. But, Ronnie, you know, now we're having a claim to a vacant WBO 154 title. Ronnie, I thought we had a 154 champ.
Well, you got to remember, they stripped the Demetrius Andre of that belt. They stripped him of that belt because, you know, for inactivity. You know, when he was supposed to fight Jermell Charlo, when I was training Jermell, they were supposed to fight, but then Demetrius backed out. Then he had another fight scheduled at 160, but he backed out of that. Then he backed out of another fight, you know, and he tried to make another fight with this kid, Anthony Mundine, in Australia, and they lied to Mundine, and Mundine said, you know what, you know, you ain't coming to Australia and fight me when I don't get no guarantees. So, he, you know, that fight didn't happen. So, you know, a lot of stuff happened with Demetrius. He caused on his own, through his own free will. You know, he was trying to sign with Roc Nation, and apparently you know, he claimed that they were promising him so much money. And when that didn't happen, you know, that kind of pissed the WBO off because he wasn't fighting. And again, if you don't fight, you can't make money for them. So they stripped him. And there's nothing he could say or do about it. So now, but, you know, the thing about it, his promoter was Artie Palullo and my man from Star Boxing, Joe DeGuardia, you know, they got the kid John Thompson. So, you know, so they was hoping Thompson will go over and beat Liam Smith. But, you know, and he was winning the fight from what I understand, and then he got knocked out. So now Demetrius is supposed to be fighting. I don't know when he's fighting, maybe this week or next week. I'm not sure. He's fighting somebody. And, you know, he's fighting for the WBO international title. And that's going to give him a top 15 ranking. So what they're just saying, okay, you stripped us, so now we're going to fight for your WBO international title. That's going to automatically give him a top 15 rating. So he'll probably end up going to Europe and fight Liam Smith. So it's, you know, all they want is money. So this is why, you know, this is what it's all about. You know, they'll come back around and say, hey, you know what, we're going to give you another opportunity, you know, to make some money for us. So we'll let you fight for the WBO international title and put you in the top 15 in the world, and then you can fight, you know, Liam Smith next. That's, you know, and that just makes money for them. Because remember, both fighters got to pay the same percentage to that organization.
I guess sometimes you don't need a gun to commit robbery, huh?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You could do it with words and a title.
Talk about a couple surprises this weekend. Danny O'Connor knocked out by Gabriel Basile, 41 seconds. Ronnie, this is another fight that kind of puzzled me because, you know, we all knew about, you know, Danny's work ethic and the reputation that he had, you know, within the sport. But in this fight, Danny came in dry, cold, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you know, he never broke out of sweat. I mean, you know, he just never looked like he got ready to fight. And by the time he got ready, the fight was over. Ronnie was seeing so many of these young guys that either come in overweight or seemingly unprepared. What do you contribute that to when a trainer puts all his time and effort into training the guy for this fight and making sure that he's putting his best foot forward?
Well, I didn't see the fight, but, you know, but I know Danny O'Connor very well. As you know, I trained Danny for a little while. And, you know, Danny... It's one thing I did know is Danny was in shape. Danny always trains, and he trains hard every day. You know, Danny is the kind of kid that he's not going to not train. You know, he's going to train hard. Now, you know, if he came out cold, I don't have no idea, you know, what happened in that situation. But, you know, we got to understand that this is boxing. It only takes one punch, one shot, and it could be over with. And this is what happened in the fight. You know, I mean, you know, we could blame it on a lot of things, you know, but the thing that happened was Danny got hit and got caught on the button with the right shot. And while you got to go back and you got to look at the guy's record, the guy only had 2 KOs. So it's not like this guy was a KO puncher. Sometimes a fighter just get hit in the right spot at the right time. And, you know, from what I understand, Danny threw a punch and missed. The guy, you know, did a sidestep and threw the punch hard as he could. And with force against force, makes it a lot harder than it actually really could be if you wouldn't help the force with the force. So, you know, Danny just got caught with the shot, and it knocked him out. So, you know, it happens, man. This is one of the things I say all the time. Anything can happen in the sport. And while we look to blame this person or that person, you know, it's nobody's fault, you know. Danny threw a punch, he missed, he got hit, he got knocked out. That's it. That's the end of the story. There's nothing more to it than that, you know. It's not that he didn't train properly. It's not that – it's not the trainer's fault. It's the other guy caught it with a great shot and hit him with it, and the fight is over. So, you know, this is what I say all the time. We have to accept things when we don't want to accept them, you know. We have to accept them as they are. It happened, you know. He got knocked out, but it happens in boxing, you know. This is the thing. Muhammad Ali got knocked out. George Foreman got knocked out. You know, Joe Frazier got knocked out. You know, all these great fighters have gotten knocked out before. So it's not like the end of the world because you say a guy got knocked out. No, it happens, you know. And it didn't matter if Danny had warmed up and he was pouring down with sweat or whatever. People were going to make the excuse, but maybe he was, you know, he did too much in the back because he was just so sweaty. But when you come in there and you look dry or whatever, sometimes it depends on the weather. You know, sometimes it might be hot. I mean, it might be cold in the dressing room. You know, that's the way it was when I was in San Antonio the other night with Cowboy. It was cool back there. Man, we shot a bus, and we hit the pass for like four rounds before we went out, and he didn't have a bead of sweat on it. But sometimes it's just the elements. So, you know, and while I wasn't there, I don't know what happened with Danny. You know, I didn't know. I don't know if how much he warmed up. But me knowing Danny O'Connell, Danny warmed up good before he went out there. So maybe it wasn't showing on the outside, but on the inside, Danny was warm. He was ready. But he just got caught with a good shot and got knocked out. And the rest is history. So you know what? It goes down as in books, as a loss, but you know what? It's not the end of his career.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. Like you said, I mean, there are too many people that know Danny, know his work ethic, and, you know, understand that, you know, it just might have been a bad day at the office. Ronnie, one of the things that kind of amused me while we're still talking about those fights, I want to stick with Liam Smith here, 154 pounds. The first man he called out after he won his fight was Shane Mosley. Ronnie, I mean, you know, I understand, you know, maybe from a financial point of view, you know, Liam's looking for a big name or, you know, a big purse. But, Ronnie, is that the right path to start him, Shane Mosley?
Well, you know, a lot of guys feel Shane is past his prime. You know, everybody in boxing feel that, you know, that Shane is past his prime. He didn't prove anything by stopping a guy like Mayorga because people know who Mayorga is. Everybody in boxing know, you know, Mayorga don't train, he smoke, he drink, and he take fights. That's, you know. So, you know, look, Liam is just like any other fighter. He wants to make some money with somebody with a name. And, hey, him and Shane had this little Twitter war that they doing, and all of a sudden now, you know, Shane wants to fight. And he wants to fight Shane because he figured, hey, there's nobody else out there that I can make a whole lot of money with. But if everybody know the name Shane Mosley, he did win his last fight. So all of a sudden now, hey. But the thing about it is Shane haven't fought at 154 pounds in a very long time. He's not even in the WBO ratings. His last fight he fought at 160. So how can he get in the ratings to be a contender? So, but what's going to happen is if the fight does happen, the WBO will stick him in there because, again, it's about the money. You know, can they make some money off of a guy like Shane Mosley, you know, who can generate you know, who has a name, and he could generate some money. And so, you know, this is what it's all about, money. It's not about anything else but the money. So they will put him in the rankings if these guys are serious about fighting each other.
Yeah, well, hey, let's see what happens here. But I want to stick over in England because there's another gentleman that we're both familiar with, Mr. Andy Lee. His fight is back on again with Mr. Billy Joe Saunders. Ronnie, how do you see this fight playing out?
You know, I mean, man, this fight has been on twice already. You know, first Andy Lee got hurt, then he got set back, then all of a sudden Saunders got hurt. And he got back, so I don't know, man. It's, you know, to me, it's a toss-up fight. Both guys are good, you know. Andy Lee is the champion, so, you know. And I know he wanted to fight back in Ireland, and all of a sudden he got hurt, and so they switched it back. They switched it to England. Then Saunders got hurt. Then they kept it in England. So I don't know, man. I mean, it's a Well, both guys have the capabilities to win. So I think it's a 50-50 fight.
Well, let's talk about this pay-per-view that's coming up this weekend. And Golovkin and Lemieux. Lemieux's been, you know, he's made his usual statements, you know, about what he thinks is going to happen in the fight. He says it's not all about the power. That he's considers himself the better boxer. Ronnie, how do you see this fight playing out? And are you looking forward to fireworks? Or do you think that maybe, you know, we are going to have the strategic fight that we're not expecting?
No, I really think that this fight is going to, you know, knock out one or the other. You know, both guys can punch. You know, I think we all can agree on that. That both guys have a good punch. Now, Lemieux, you know, he comes in and he just wings punches. And this is why I think he's going to get knocked out because, you know, he has no direction on his shots. You know, he is a guy, he can punch with both hands, but, you know, he really has no plan on how to use his hands. You know, he goes in and he just goes for the knockout, you know, and he can punch. Now, not to say that he ain't going to hit Triple J and hurt him, you know, and don't be surprised if it's a knockout on both sides, you know, because, I mean, a knockdown on both sides early in the fight because both of these guys can punch. And I think, you know, you're going to see earlier that they're going to definitely respect each other, you know, a little bit anyway. But one guy has to take, you know, it had to take charge. And, you know, for me, I think it's going to be Triple G. The guy is smart. You know, while he don't have the best defense in the world, he does have some defense. He knows how to get out of the way of some shots. Other shots he don't. But, you know, it depends on how close Lemieux get to him. If Lemieux doesn't try to at least stay at arm's distance, he's going to get hit with the short shots. That's the favorite of Triple G, and that's where he hurts you at close. You know, from far away, he have a little trouble hurting you from far away. But, you know, when you're a guy like Lemieux who know you can punch, you know, then you want to try to get close as possible to make all your shots land. And that's going to be his downfall.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this fight, though. I think it's going to be a pretty entertaining card as far as the latest pay-per-views. Ronnie, hey, Tuesday night, so glad to have Tuesday night boxing back. It's really, really great. Devin Alexander back in the ring against Aaron Martinez. 12 rounds. Is this a good little, dust off for Mr. Devin Alexander, Ronnie?
Well, you know, this is the same kid that for Robert Guerrero, you know, just Martinez. So he's a good little fighter, but you know, I think if Devin is not 100%, then I think Devin is going to lose. But, you know, I don't think that Devin would come in, you know, not 100%. I think he's going to train for this guy because he realizes another loss can mean disaster to his career. So while it's a good fight for him, I expect Devin to win, but I just hope he's 100%. You know, he focused and that, you know, everything can go well because, you know, it can definitely go sour on him if he's not ready.
Most definitely. Another good little matchup. Friday, PBC on Spike. Bonfire against Cleverly. Light heavyweights. How do you see that playing out, Ronnie?
Well, I think Bonfire wins. You know, I just read something today that Cleverly, you know, he's given too much respect to Fumfara. You know, he's definitely, you know, I mean, it's okay to say, hey, a guy is good, but this, you know, but he, you know, he's saying, oh, man, Fumfara is a guy that don't make a lot of mistakes, you know. And that's one thing that you don't do is give a guy confidence. You know, you don't give the opponent confidence, you know. I mean, even if it ain't true, you have to say something negative like, you know, I see the guy makes a lot of mistakes and I'm going to capitalize on him. And that's just to get in the other guy's head to make him think, well, you know, what is he talking about? Maybe I need to go back and check myself and look. And now he's, you know, get the guy a little worried. Don't give him confidence that, you know, that he don't make a whole lot of mistakes. You know, I would just be saying just the opposite of that, you know, so. I don't know, but, you know, but the fight is going to be in Chicago. And, you know, Fumfara, you know, he's confident right now because of his performance against Adonis Stevenson and his performance against Chavez Jr. And, you know, he's on a good winning streak right now. And he's beating some good guys. So, you know, I know he's going to be ready, and I expect him to win. And I think Cleverly didn't do himself any favors by, you know, talking so good about Fumfara.
Yeah, like you said, you know, instilling confidence in your opponent, I'm not sure if that's really the best thing to do prior to a fight. But staying in the light heavyweight division, we do have Shawnee Monahan. He's going to be back in the ring up in New York. And he's going to be facing another guy that's a friend of this show, but he's had a few recent setbacks. It's going to be kind of interesting to see how he performs after a long layoff, and that's Mr. Donovan George. Ronnie, we haven't heard a lot of things about Donovan lately, and the few things that we have heard have not really been that good, but Ronnie, do you think that Donovan is back on track, and is this a good comeback fight for him?
Well, it's not a good comeback fight because, you know, he's going to New York to fight a guy that's from New York, you know, it's Sean Monahan. But look, the thing about Donovan is he always has a puncher's chance. The guy can punch. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And, you know, now he's, you know, I still think he's a 6 to 8 pounder, but he still wants to fight at 175, which maybe he had problems with the weight. I mean, I don't know. But Donovan is a strong puncher. So he's going to always be in the fight. And that's something that you got to give him a lot of credit for because he can punch. And, you know, but he's the kind of guy that, you know, He takes subpar fights sometimes. He fights subpar a lot, you know, and I think because of the opponents. But, you know, and I know a couple of times he, you know, he failed a couple of drug tests and, you know, I mean, he's just all over the place, man. And if he can get his head together, he can fight, you know, but he's just got to get his head in the right position, in the right place. And maybe in a fight like this, you know, to go to New York, you know, that's volume because he's not afraid to do that. He's not afraid to go and fight another man in his hometown. Now, Sean Monahan, he's an okay fighter to me. He's all right. He's not the best guy in the world, But, you know, he's a guy everybody liked because he sells tickets. And, you know, he always draw a good crowd in New York. So, you know, House of Territory, John Van Jones, been there, done that. So it's going to be a good fight, you know, but as far as me picking a winner, I can't because I don't know.
Here we go again, Ronnie. Luis Ortiz is fighting 12 rounds for the vacant WBA interim heavyweight title. Where the hell did this come from, Ronnie? We got Klitschko's. We got I'm speechless here. Another heavyweight interim champion. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Well, again, it's sanctioned fees. You know, he's going to make some good money. You know, he's fighting on pay-per-view, and he's going to make some good money. So, hell, they say, well, you know what? I write your fella drug test twice. So, you know what? We're going to give you another chance. You know, as long as he's making money, you know, look, he probably make about $1.5 million in the fight. So they get 3% of that. So they go take that, you know, and give him another drug test, and hopefully he passes it, or hopefully he loses it. He don't pass it, you know. It don't make a difference. You know, as long as he's making money for them, they don't care. They're going to keep doing it, you know. And this guy has been dirty twice, and they keep giving him a license. So why? Because of money. That's just no ifs, ands, and buts about it, that, you know, these guys are money hungry. So this is all it means to them. Money means more than anything. And they are willing to, you know, continue to give this man another chance until, you know, I mean, he's just going to keep, as long as he's making money, they're going to keep making money. So that's what it's all about.
Ronnie, you know, the one thing that I enjoy about Sundays when I talk to you and Scully is that you guys don't pull any punches. You tell exactly the way it is. And, hey, you know, I mean, some it's just hard to go away without just scratching your head and saying, what the hell? And what are the, and what, you know, what are they just trying to feed the boxing public? But, Ronnie, thank you so much for your time, my man. Why don't you tell us any shows that you might have coming up soon, any of your fighters that are going to be in the ring, and kind of let us know what's going on over there at Plex.
Well, you know, our next show is not until November 13th, Evan Rodriguez. Rodriguez is going to be fighting Michael Seals in the main event on Spike TV on November 13th. Then on November 25th, Eric Lande Lara is going to be defending his title against Jan Zivic on ESPN. That's on a Wednesday, on a special edition ESPN, Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. So, and we have some guys on the undercards on both of those, November 13th and November 25th.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that. And as always, you know, it's always a pleasure to have you and your guys on the show. We'll be having Cowboy and probably Steve on the show Tuesday. Ronnie, like I said, always good to have you back on the show, my man. Enjoy spending this time with you and look forward to having you back on the show again next week. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Have a good one. Well, everyone, had a great time tonight talking a little weekend wrap with Iceman John Scully and Ronnie Shields. Looking forward to having everyone back on the show next week. And don't forget to tune in Tuesday. We will have Steve Lovett. We will have Cowboy Carl. Also looking for Tuukka Cloncurry. And tune in. Let's see. Maybe you never can tell who that fourth guest will be. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week. Ooh.